Welcome to Gulf Force Side Effects. I'm your host, Kevin Simon. You all know my ball-headed buddy, John. That's my co-host. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good, man. Doing good. How you doing?
Good. And we have another damn army guy on tonight. And his name is Mike Crane. How you doing, Mike?
Oh, I'm doing great, man.
I just want to know right now, how cold is it where y'all are at?
Hold on.
I know John, what, you're in 20-something degrees right now and snowing.
Oh, he's probably colder than me.
Yeah, anyway.
I'm 28 right now.
Well, I can tell both of you, y'all can keep that damn weather, because here it got down to 15 degrees in the state of Texas, all the way towards Houston, and I don't want that. I don't want that stuff ever again.
You don't have a Tesla.
Oh, my God. That's could you funny. Imagine? Well, there's a lot of them down here, by the way, Mike.
Yeah.
But, I mean, before we get into it, I tell everybody I hope y'all are doing safe and everybody's safe. And I wish everybody prayers for all the snowstorms y'all are getting. And I better y'all than me. All right, now we're going to get into the show.
Yeah, I got a new toy this summer, though. You know, the wife told me to finally buy something that I wanted, so I went out and bought a brand new Bronco, full size.
There you go. You can drive in the snow in that thing.
So you know what I'm doing tomorrow.
That's awesome.
I'm going to go out here and do some donuts.
So everybody, I also want to kind of bring up something about the sailor that fell overboard and that passed away. I'm going to, you know, send my regards out to his family. I didn't know if y'all heard about that story today. He fell overboard, and I'm not going to say his name or anything, but most people know who it is. You know, they've seen the story. So my prayers go with the families. And also with the two Navy SEALs that went overboard. And I didn't know if y'all heard about that. A Navy SEAL went over, the other one went after him. And from what I understand about the story about that is that if a SEAL falls over the side, one jumps in, so they have a buddy. And so, you know, they were off the coast of Somalia and everything. And so I wish them the best of prayers, too. So now we're going to get into it, Mike.
All righty.
So, tell us, this is probably one of the most interesting stories I've ever heard. So lay it on everybody.
Well, I'll start at the very beginning, and then I'm gonna fast track through some stuff. 1979, like in September, I decided, hey, you know, I'm in my 12th year of high school. I'm going to sign up for the Army. So I did the some kind of program, you know, where you can, well, delayed entry, that's what it was. Maybe my mind's a mush. So, I finished high school, and I went to boot camp, and I went to AIT, and, you know, I did my couple years active duty, got out, right, joined the reserves. And that's cool, you know, having a good time, you know, in the reserves, you know. And it just got to be a lot. I don't know about you guys, you know, if you guys ever in the reserves, but we were a priority unit, so we started training all the time. And I was like, nah, that ain't for me, you know? Who wants to, you know, I got a life, you know? I'm in my 20s, man. I don't want to be hanging around with these guys all the time. So then I was like, you know, I go to my commanders and say, you know, what do I do, man? I got enough time, man. What do I do? And they were like, well, hell, you can go IRR. What's that? I never even heard of it before, you know? And I think a lot of people never heard of the IRR, but it's inactive ready reserve. So that's great. You know, I turned my equipment in, and I was hunky dory. And in the early fall of 1990, I was out of uniform for about 4 years. Remember that. 4 years I was out of uniform. I get a letter in the mail, says, hey, we need you to come in for a physical. You haven't had a physical in years, right? You're overdue. We'll pay you for the whole day. All right. So I was living close to Fort Meade, so I just went over to Fort Meade and got it done. Never thought two things about it. I mean, you know, I was like, yeah, whatever, you know. Thursday night after Christmas in 1990, about 1-2 o'clock in the morning, my phone's ringing, right? I was like, who in the hell is calling me? I pick it up, you know, and I'm half asleep. The next thing you know, and I wish I could remember this guy's name because I'd haunt his ass to this day. It was a lieutenant colonel call from St. Louis. If anybody knows anything about the Army and stuff, St. Louis is like a big headquarters out there, especially for the reserves, IRR, and all that happy horse shit. And he says, well, first of all, I was like, I don't know if I can say this, but he's like, well, I go to him. I said, hey, who's effing with me? You know? Because he says, son, I ain't effing with you. And I was like, well, what are you calling me for? He said, well, I'm calling to tell you you've just been activated. I says, activated for what? He says, back to regular Army duty. I says, you got to be shitting me. I said, I haven't had a uniform on in 4 years. And he's like, do you work tomorrow? I was like, yeah, I got a job, you know. And he goes, well, he says, don't go to work in the morning. He says, somebody's going to deliver your orders to your house. Okay. This is a Friday morning, right? I'm living down in Maryland, right? And I get my orders. I got to be at Fort Jackson on Sunday. So now it's like a rut row. You know, what do? I got a condo and I got cars. And it's like, what the hell do you do with all this stuff, you know? So I got a good friend to help me out, you know, and take care of my place and take care of my vehicles and stuff. And I even signed a little power of attorney there. So I go down to Fort Jackson, show up, and it was kind of like going back into boot camp. You know, going through, getting your clothing, getting your equipment, you know, all over. You know what I mean? Anything you wanted to do, shots, physicals, you wanted to go to the range, man, you could go to the range for 24 hours a day. They were open, you know. You wanted to catch up on medical stuff, you wanted to work on NBC stuff, you know. So that still wasn't sinking in yet, right?
Mike, what was your MOS?
Well, I had a couple different ones, okay? I had, you know, I was supply at one time. That was 76, okay? And then I went to driving school.
Okay.
So I was authorized to drive everything and anything the military had, man, which was pretty neat, you know? Because they had some pretty nice trucks even back in 1990, you know, and even earlier. You know, they had some.
Yeah, that was just. Yeah. When we were young and dumb and yeah.
I want a Humvee.
Oh, they're pieces of shit.
Yeah, but I want I've always wanted one. That was my dream car.
Look, when we were in driving school, they actually made us roll them over.
What the?
Yeah. So you could
roll it over.
They had us on side hills, you know, and you know, they tell you when to turn the wheel and how hard, you know, you're all strapped in. It's like a racing harness on you. And they want you to roll it. They want you to feel what it's like to know how far you can push them, you know? And they want you to see if you can get it back up on the wheels, too. Because if the engine don't stall out and it's on its side, you got a good chance of getting it back up on the wheels by just gassing it, you know, and digging the wheels, you know, turning the wheels down into the ground. Just, you know,
okay.
In case you ever, you know, out and get a DUI and you want to try to escape yet, there's a little thing you can do.
Now, so what happened after you got to base, got all your clothing and all that stuff?
You know, I you know, first of all, they told me when that lieutenant colonel called me, he says, hey, don't worry. He says, we're just calling people up. He says, you know, we're going to fill slots here in stateside, you know, and everything. He says, you'll probably just be a teacher or something here, you know. I said, okay, right. So we're going along. Wednesday morning, we go out for formation. They start calling names out. Now, you got to realize where these barracks that I was not in. We weren't IRR, you know. There was National Guard. There was Reserve. There was regular Army guys in there. Everything, right? And we still didn't know what the hell was going on. Next thing you know, they said, hey, you guys got 2 hours, get your shit packed. So I was like, oh, where are we going? Right? So we come out, we get on a bus, like a trailways bus, whatever you want to call it. The windows are all blacked out. It was like a prison bus, you know? Mm. And we drove for a couple hours. went into an airport hangar. To this day, I still don't know where we were at. It was an Air Force base, I'm sure. And we stayed in there till dark. And once it got dark, they opened up those great big bay doors, and all you could see was MPs lined up. They marched us out to a Pan Am 747.
Ah.
Flew from there to New York City, spent quite a few hours there, flew to Greece, landed in Greece, got fuel, flew down to Africa, because we were under the radar. You know, that we weren't listed anywhere in flight, right? And once we turn down in Africa and start turning back up, the captain comes on, he's thanking everybody, you know, and all, and we had stewardess on those planes too, if you can believe it or not. Honest to God, we did. And he's like, hey, I'm gonna be turning over the command of the ship. And I don't know why, but he called it a ship. So maybe you'd like that, Kevin.
Dang right. Dang right I do.
So, and this guy comes on, and he says he's Colonel so-and-so, and he's like, I fly for SAC. He says, I'm going to fly you guys the rest of the way in. By now, we kind of know where we're going, right? And they dimmed all the lights down on the inside the plane. And then he tells us to open the visors up, on the window visors. We have a fighter escort on each side of us. Like,
really?
Yeah, it's like, here comes the F-bomb. Where in the F are we going? What's going on, right? And I knew at that time, you know, we weren't flying, you know, 40,000 feet either. So before we landed, two things happened. One, they issued us a full combat load. Kevin won't know what that is. You might understand. Full combat load, right?
Yeah.
On a civilian plane, right?
Yeah.
And we were all assigned a job when we landed, because the captain told us, says, hey, we're only going to be underground 10 minutes. He said, so, no, you got to realize we all got at least two duffel bags, rucksacks, and everything else underneath. So we had to get all of our shit off in 10 minutes. Well, okay, we did that. We landed on the desert, in the sand, if you can believe that or not. I never knew you could do shit like that. You know, I mean, that 747, man, that was a big plane. So then they put us on, I'll call it a little jitney buses, like the short buses, you know, the 20-seaters and stuff. And yeah, they drove us down to the port of Daman. This is still nighttime. They put us in a warehouse. So we literally are living in a warehouse, right? There ain't no bathrooms there, you know. They tried to make, you know, quick porta potty things outside for us and stuff, you know. And my first full night there was when I went through the first Scud attack. And I tell you what, man, could you realize, like, we were like in a civilization area, you know? We were like kind of like downtown, but we weren't, you know. And all these sirens went off, and I was like, what the hell is that? You know, we're all like, man, we're all starting to run. You know, like, we don't know where we're going to run to, but we're running. And next thing you know, someone says gas, right? So now we're
putting our shit.
Oh, yeah. Now, and then all of a sudden you hear the Patriot missiles take off. Man, they rock your world, man. Because they were only a couple hundred yards away from us. And to hear them things go off and hear it hit that Scud, oh, my God. It sounded like an atomic bomb going off. And then you can hear all the shrap metal hitting the building and stuff.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That was great, right? So then a couple of days after that, the captain comes in and he says, calling out names, like 20 of us. And he takes us and he says, hey, you're going to be in my unit now. And we were all like, okay, what unit is it? Well, we were a provisional unit.
What the hell is that?
I don't know if you ever heard of that either.
What is that?
A provisional unit was made up. We were made up just for that, you know, that war, basically. So we had no command structure, you know, we didn't. So we were, you know, I was an IRR. We had reservists. We had National Guards. We had regular army. And with this, hell, my first sergeant was a cook.
Huh.
Yeah.
Well, at least you probably had a good chow then, huh?
Negative, Ghost Rider. We didn't have really? We didn't have anything. We had no equipment. Nothing. You know, we had our pup tents. What the hell good are they gonna do? You know? We didn't have trucks yet. We didn't have anything, right? Well, then we drove down to the country of Qatar. They were neutral, okay? They didn't want anything to really do with the war, but they were kind of... So we were going into there to pick up trucks because our trucks, the Hemets they were supposed to give us, were out in the ocean. They weren't priority coming in. Then they needed some stuff done. So we went down. We go through. It's like going through customs up on the border anywhere. They took our IDs, were like our passport. So they took our IDs and held them there, and they took our weapons. Because we weren't allowed to take our weapons into their country.
Oh, okay.
Well, that's crazy.
Thank God we weren't, you know, we were only in their country for like an hour. We went in, we grabbed these civilian rigs. So you imagine, you know, here we are, like driving a red truck and a blue truck and a yellow truck. I had a nice Mac, man, it's yellow, man. But boy, it didn't take me long to get that shit painted up. And we went out on our first mission. We drove from there all the way up to the port of Al Jebel. We get to Al Jebel, we get loaded up with these MSLR projectile rockets. I don't know if you know what they are. These are long babies, big babies, right? And we end up going, man. We just drive for three goddamn days with these things. And let me tell you what. Little did I know, in January, it gets freaking cold over there at nighttime.
Yeah, it does.
Yes, it does.
Yes, it does.
It was cold as bloody. I'm still clear back when you said you were down in wherever you flew into, or no, wherever you left from. I still think it's funny when they opened up the doors and there was a bunch of MPs. What evidently they thought y'all were gonna run, so they had. Everybody flanked with MPs. I mean,
you know, to this day, I mean, it was like we were going through a gauntlet line.
They were their chauffeurs.
Yeah, chauffeur, sure. Yeah,
they
roll with that.
They chauffeur your ass on that plane. That's what they did. Okay,
they're like, hell, you ain't running, man, because then that means our asses are going to have to go over. You know?
So. You know, you brought up that it gets cold. I mean, I can remember it being 118 degrees out there, and then at nighttime, it'd be freaking freezing cold on the water. And I'm like, how the hell do you go from the heat to the freezing cold, man? It's just like, I mean, I remember staying at watch, and we only had short sleeve shirts. All of our stuff was packed away, and because I was stationed on Guam, we didn't have dress blues. We only had dress whites and then our dungarees and stuff and all short sleeve. And I mean, I remember thinking, how the hell do I get to my jacket? I remember it being so damn cold and then days are hot. So, yeah, I mean, I think all of us kind of experienced that part. And so I just can't believe that they just called your ass up and said, hey, you know what? Your ass is going over there.
I still can't believe it to this day. You know,
so how many were on that plane? About 300 folks?
Oh, three plus.
How many planes?
Oh, that was just one.
Okay.
Like I said, we weren't on, I mean, every time, like when we stopped at New York City and they actually had us deplane, I don't know why. I think there was something going on. But they took us to like a terminal there that there was nobody around. You know, those gates are down, you know, and the TV monitors. No, we weren't on it. Yeah.
Oh wow, man. So okay, so you're over there. Where was your main destination that you went to? Y'all's main, what do y'all call that?
Long Base Echo.
Base. Okay.
And Long Base Bravo. See, we were provisional. We didn't have anything, you know. So we begged, borrowed, and appropriated stuff. I got to use that word. I get in a lot of trouble because we appropriated a lot of stuff over the time. if it wasn't tied down, if it was tied down, we might still wanted it. We took it.
Okay, so do they give y'all little shovels in everyone else's backpack?
Yeah.
They really do do that, so that way you can shovel.
Yeah, the handle folds over, you know, the head.
Okay, so you can dig and poop in the ground and.
If you want to go to all that hassle,
you tell.
So basically, it was basically either to build you a foxhole or to poop in the ground, basically, is what the shovel's for.
I knew you
Army guys were so full of shit. I'm just so glad to finally know it.
Well, I'll tell you about that.
Or to beat the hell out of somebody if that's all you got on your,
I guess. I always saw the movies where they all carried shovels. I'm like, why the hell are they carrying shovels? I knew it was for, you know, digging holes, foxholes and stuff to get their ass out of the line of fire and stuff. So how long were you over there?
186 days.
Holy crap.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I was over there before the president ever even signed the orders to activate anybody. And I was there for longer than what we were even authorized to be there. What? So when they found out that some of us were there, they beat feet and got us the hell out of there.
So at what point, Mike, did you start noticing issues with yourself?
Go ahead and say it. Changes in your body. Go ahead and say
it. You guys know about the shots.
Yeah.
You know, the anthrax shots. And you know about the pills. You know, we had a couple different pills. And we had, I'll call it a kick-ass caffeine pill, which I don't know what the hell they were. But, man, we could go for days on end without sleeping, man. And you were wired up to the hilt. Whatever.
Really?
Oh, hell yeah.
I don't remember. We had our PB pills, and outside of that, I don't remember how many of them I took. Outside of that, no, what kind of good drugs did they give you?
Well, we had injectors, too.
Well, we had them, but I would go to hell if I was going to use that damn thing.
Why not?
You know?
They didn't give me no injectors. I probably didn't need them.
Because they'd throw your ass over the side if you did.
I was probably already wiry as all get out. I mean, okay, so you're there. We were over there about 6 months, our ship, because both of our ships on Guam, our sister ships, supply ships, got tangled up in a typhoon magically, and they, you know, have issues. So, you know, magically. So we had to stay and take their spot, which our commanding officer, you know, just so gracious for him to keep me there longer than I needed to be. So I wasn't even supposed to be in during Desert Storm. I was in Desert Shield. That's all we were supposed to do, and then we were going to steam back.
Yeah, how'd that make out?
It didn't. We just steamed our butts all around that Persian Gulf. And so, you get back. Say you're there. What changes did you notice that was happening to you?
I lost probably 20, 30 pounds. I was probably in the best shape of my life that way. Where we got those shots in our arms, I still to this day get sores on my arm.
Really?
It's like you just went and got, one of your shots, you know, in the muscle, you know how that feels like for a day or two? Exactly how it got. Yeah, I don't know if you heard that story or not, but I get these blotches, red, like pink blotches on my body. I know that we were exposed. You know, we were in, you know, I had a couple other Scuds land up there at Port of Aljubail. I mean, real close to us. And every goddamn biological detector was singing. And we weren't the only ones there. You know, the Brits were there. Their ship was all gone off.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, I know we were exposed to stuff. You know, not allowed to give blood. You know, when we came home, you know, we were told never, never again. You can only give blood for yourself. They were sending us these 155 shells, too. And they were coming straight from Aberdeen Proving Grounds. They weren't the ones left over from Vietnam. These things were so hot with the white phosphorus and the mercury and everything that some of the bitches were sweating.
Really? So,
huh? You never saw any of that?
I did not.
Oh, I'm telling you what, it's so, you know, we didn't have gloves. We didn't have no, it's not like, you know, I'm reaching out here in my drawer here, it's COVID time, and I'll pull out, I'm not allowed to say that, right? And I'll put on a pair of latex gloves. We didn't have any of that stuff, you know?
Right, right, exactly. And either did we. We never used gloves neither. And everything. And here's the one thing that I find interesting. And I'm going to do a sponsor right now for the United States Navy. As I had 3 square meals a day. We all had, you know, restrooms all over the place. So that's why I went to the Navy and not the Army. I mean, look.
I always had 3 squares. I can never say I didn't.
Okay.
Have
well, but the one thing
three
that.
3 squares of what?
Meals a day. Well, you know, see.
First of all, you want to talk about our restroom. The first time I found myself a wooden chair, I appropriated it. I cut a hole in it.
Wow. Right?
That was my toilet, you know? And that sucker, I had strapped on the back of my truck. You know, I wasn't the only one, you know?
Oh, I'm sure.
And then if you know anything about tractor trailers, between those dual tires, there's a nice little room. So it's kind of like when you're out hunting. You know, you put your back against the tree, you squat down. That's a major backrest. Man, it's actually pretty comfortable.
It's amazing when you need to use the resources that is in your head, what you will come up with. And that's why men invent a lot of stuff, is because we do the stupid stuff. And then we're like, oh, hey, this is a great idea. I don't invent it. And then other men are like, dang, why didn't I, you know, think of that?
There was no reaching down and grabbing a handful of grass or leaves or something if you didn't have anything to, you know, clean yourself with. You know, all you had was sand. I mean, that's all you had.
I remember Jeremy being on telling us about that, about, you know, they were out there and they were like dead sheep inside the shacks and stuff that they had to clean out. It's like, that's why I went in the Navy, guys. That's it, right there. Okay, so
I thought you went in the Navy because you didn't want to have to worry about.
I didn't want to get shot. I didn't want to get shot. At least I'm honest. I'm probably the only honest person that you will ever meet that's a veteran saying, "Well, I didn't want to get shot, so that's why I didn't go in the Army or the Marines." I credit y'all with the utmost respect though, because y'all are our front lines. Y'all take care of business, and I can't believe I'm saying something nice about this. It was very hard for me to swallow that pill right I just took right there on saying something nice. But I do want to say this, though. I do want to say this. I exhibited problems 3 months after I got out of Desert Storm. And I was corrected by an email I got. I would like to thank the person. I'm not going to say name. It's not the Gulf War 1985. The name of the movie is called The Gulf War. Okay, so I got that out of the way. The Gulf War. But it does say 1985 and about the Americans selling, you know, all the recipes and the materials for Saddam to make all that great.
Yeah, that's
you know,
proven.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah. It was proven then. And so, but when you got back, how was your VA experience?
When we got back, I went to Fort Jackson. We were on quarantine for 7 days, right? I guess they wanted to make sure we weren't bringing anything home, you know, contagious. Right. My first meal, I went out to eat. Man, I barfed my guts out, man. My body didn't know how to handle regular food. And, you know, I ain't gonna lie. So when I finally get home, I was drunk for 3 months. I ain't gonna lie, I was drunk for 3 months, man, all summer long, man. I was drunk. And I was having, you know, then after that, you know, you start having the, I never had asthma before, but boy, do I got it now. Bronchitis, oh, do I have it now. I just had a severe attack about a month and a half ago. And, you know, they can say all they want, but, you know, we got all this shit in our body now.
Yeah.
You know, your spouse can even tell when you get intimate, you know, that there's, you know, they say it burns.
It's a proven fact. And see, and that's the one thing that a lot of guys don't want to come out and talk about that, but it is the truth. Burning semen is a very real thing. A lot of us have it. And so, but the one thing that what a lot of people don't know listening right now is you were not even supposed to be over there.
No, that's why I'm so goddamn disgruntled, you know. So anybody wants to do some research, and I never did this until a few years ago because my mindset went a whole different way here years ago. And I held a full-time job for 25 years, you know. So, but those last couple of years I was working, I was starting to have issues, real issues with stuff in your head, stuff in your body, you know. Like, hell, I don't even know what it's like to have a regular bowel movement.
Yeah, and all that.
Yeah.
Me neither.
You know what that's all about, right?
Yep.
So I went to the VA here a couple years ago. I never, ever wanted to go to the VA at all. I despised it. I never wanted to. But I don't even want to put my head in that place again. I don't ever want to be there again, you know. But, well, long story short, I'm making up for it big time right now. So I actually had a good VSO, right? He was actually a friend of mine. So, I mean, I went in and he's like, "Boy, you got to do this, 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 this." He said, you know, and this was before the PAC Act stuff happened. And I know you're not a real fan of the PAC Act stuff. And there's a lot of good reasons why, but all of a sudden, you know, he calls me up one day. He says, "Hey," he says, "you got 10% for tinnitus." And I was like, "Oh, wow. You know, that sounds like a big thing, you know." I said, "What do I get for hearing loss?" He says, "Zero." Yeah. And I was like, "What?" He says, "You barely passed your hearing test." And I was like, "Oh, I know that." But so they said they made it service connected at zero. All right.
Yeah.
Well, I filed a lot of other claims then. I had to have surgery when I came home, right, on my hands and fingers and stuff. So all those claims I put in for that, they all have to deal with that. They just straight up denied it.
Right.
Straight up denied. I mean, you guys did the surgery, you know? You guys took the bone out of my hip and put my fingers. And now you're going to, you know, deny me for it? You know, for the nerve damage in the leg.
I know. When you told me that story, I was blown away. I was like, "What? You got to be kidding me!"
I still can't believe it. And so, you know, I'm pissed off, right? And I was having some real issues upstairs here in the noggin. And so my VSO says, "Hey, you need to file for PTSD, right?" Excuse me. You actually have to fill out the paperwork yourself. You know, he can't just type it into the computer and stuff. You got to really write stuff out. It took me 8 months to do 3 pages. The paperwork sat on my dining room table forever. Finally, my wife said, "Hey, I'm going to be out of town for a few days. When I get home, you need to get this stuff done." Well, when she came home, I had my name on the paper. That was it. So, you know, I'm going through a vet center. You know, the vet centers are pretty good. I kind of like them, you know. I don't know if you guys have any around you, but it's not the VA.
The vet center as opposed to, you're saying a vet center as opposed, I'm.
The vet center is like a group where they can meet, talk, and they kind of help. It has different group settings. I don't know if I have one near us, but I probably do. But it's a really good, like organizational group.
Yeah. I guess I've heard of it, but I don't think. Well, if we have them around here, I'm unaware of
them. Yeah. Well, I'll put a you know, a good thing in for them. I mean, I've been seeing the same counselor there, you know, for quite a few years now, and one day I don't know what the hell we were talking about, because sometimes we just shoot the shit, you know, and all of a sudden I start ranting and raving for like 15 minutes. He didn't say a word, and I got done and I was like, "Oh man, I'm sorry." And he goes, "Now it's time to do that paperwork."
Right.
It took me another 2 months, and he actually typed it for me. I said, you know, I couldn't do it. I signed the paper, and within 30 days of me filing that, this is the only good thing I got to say about the VA right now. Within 30 days of filing that, they notified me for a CMP exam. Okay, now I'm already seeing these other doctors and everything, and it's already on my record and everything. So I do a video like this, you know, with the contract doctor for the VA, and we get all done. That was like 2 hours. We get done, and then we talk personal, and she's like, look, don't worry about all this, you know? And within 2-3 weeks, there I get a rating for PTSD. I was like, how in the hell does that happen that quick?
It's amazing. It is amazing. But I still have people out there. That their claims have still been in for almost 2 years and they haven't got it done. It just depends on, I think, on your reader and the people that put it in. But I want to say this about the PACT Act. I want to clarify my feelings on the PACT Act. And this is important for all y'all to understand. I am grateful for the PACT Act for the Camp Lejeune, for post 9/11 and to Afghanistan. The only reason, and I'm grateful for the cancers, I'm grateful, but the only reason I'm not happy with it and where I'm upset about it is, number one, they took out sarin gas, mustard gas, PTABS, and anthrax. That's where I'm upset about the PACT Act. I think the PACT Act is helping, from what I understand, a lot of people, and I'm grateful for that. But I'm not happy because we shouldn't have to fight for what they did to us. We shouldn't have to fight for these people to be sitting in prison right now for war crimes, for what they did to us. That's how I feel. Everybody knows my feeling on everybody involved that knew this was going on. There should be charges filed against the higher-ups. That's how I feel about it.
They won't even test me yet. I've been trying and trying for years to get tested for the sarin gas. Like I got the... You know, I mean, mostly doctors will tell you as soon as they look at your feet, they were like, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you burned your feet on it, you know. And so this is a wild story. Now, this is just recent. This is in the past 2 months. I'm trying to figure out. I'm on the toxic exposure, you know, page there, group, you know, trying to get registered into, you know, for the screenings or whatever, you know, right? And even though I have an account there and has my name and everything, it won't let me put stuff in.
It's crazy.
Yeah, so I go to the veterans advocates and everything where I'm at right now, and they were like, they pulled my paperwork. I mean, they were good. They were like, oh, hell, here's the problem. Like, we got your 214s here and your discharge stuff and all this. And terror reports, you know, and she says, like, in the DOD's computers, they don't ever have us being over there. So they don't have you over there, even though I got all the paperwork right here, it says I did. You know, because I guess there are two computer systems, you know, the VA and the DOD, they don't click, you know, they don't jive. So I can't even file it because I, like I say, I'm in a place right now where, I mean, they want to test me for everything, but legally they can't because they won't put me on the registry, you know? So they've been, you know, this was 2 months ago. They've been trying to get me. So trying to fix those records in the DOD. And, you know, a lot of our shit was all lost, you know, figure that out. Right.
So they did. So you are service connected, but you got a ways to go.
Yeah, and keep fighting it, man. Keep going in there, and you know the one thing I honestly think that they ought to do. I think they ought to go back and pay every spouse of the former military guys that have passed away. I think they should retro money back to them who have passed away from cancer and the ones who have committed suicide. Because of the stuff that goes through our heads, the stuff that they have done to us, the medications, all that stuff. And the reason I feel, and, you know, I was thinking about this early today is because A lot of people believe this stuff is in our head. Well, I'm going to tell you, one of my closest friends in the military, he was my best man at my first wedding, committed suicide. I'm angry. And I think his wife and kids and all of them should be paid back. And I'm trying not to tear up because this is where my anger issue becomes. Is because everybody, we shouldn't have to fight. I'm tired of fighting and everything. I want people to admit their faults. If I got to admit my faults, by golly, why can't they just say, hey, you know what, guys? We're sorry for what we did to y'all over there. Why? Why?
Why? Well, see, one of the things with the PAC Act that it's like for and against, like you didn't have to do anything. Like you filed for the asthma, you filed for the bronchitis, right. The sinusitis, and all that. I mean, as long as you can show that you have it, that's it. There's no CMP exam for. I mean, they just gave it to you. Boom, boom, boom. But when you had real injuries and stuff, sorry about that.
Oh, yeah.
When you have real injuries and stuff, like the ones I had surgery down there at Walter Reed and everything, and they totally denied those claims, I was like, oh, and sleep apnea too. Man, they denied that. I've been on CPAP for 5 years, right? And they deny it. And I was like, really? So I did two sleep studies now for the VA in the past couple of years. And so I appeal it, right? Right away, I appeal it. So I go, I'm with a different VSO now, which I'm probably going to change again. But so I appeal it. And within like 30, 40 days, they send me a letter and says, well, I didn't appeal that. Refiled it secondary to the PTSD is what we were told to do, right? And they say, oh, you guys didn't do the proper forms and stuff. Well, it only took a phone call to get that changed, thank God. But still, they haven't done anything, you know?
Yeah, and I'm sorry that I made some of these guys tear up on here, but, I mean, it does. I mean... How do you let your vets die? You know, it's just, this is where I'm angry, is because I see it every day. These vets come in, these vets that they're suffering, they just, and this is where we all need to come together as vets to stick up with each other and to take care of one another. And I mean, you know, John, I almost I thought it was a suicide myself because they messed up my medication. I'm a happy-go-lucky guy. 90% of the people who know me know I'm just I'm bubbly. I like to have a good time. I'm a little nutty sometimes. I like to have fun. But there's times that, it hits me. And I'm just...
There's no two ways about it. When your meds get messed up or don't get to you when they're supposed to get to you, you know, that's what makes things really, really difficult. And when they don't want to believe you or they don't, you know, trying to, I don't know. Yeah, you got to have a good therapist, which for me, I'm fortunate. I got a good therapist. She always helps me get things squared away in my mind, which, as you know, is a lot of times difficult to do for all of us.
Especially your big old brain.
Get into that rabbit hole.
Especially your big old brain. John's my therapist. I call him John when I'm in a bad mood. He's like, okay, you know. And that's the one thing, you know, this is why I me and John opened this up to everybody. Come on. We don't want anybody to feel alone. We want everybody to work together. And today, John, you'd be so proud of me. I went threefold today. So this morning I opened up the door for somebody. I told them, have a good day. And then I went over to, I stopped at a store, opened the door for somebody. I'm walking out, this guy's, you know, doing gas. I looked at him in one of the big old trucks. I was like, man, I hope you have a great day, you know, and all this. And that guy was excited to hear it. And so that's what I'm saying. We can stop the craziness going on with even veterans and non-veterans. Just being happy, being bubbly, enjoy one another. But we're now, you know, Mike, I really appreciate you coming on. I mean,
I feel like I was drafted.
That's right.
People wonder why I am so angry all the time. And I snap because, you know, it's like you said there the other week when I talked to you, like, how in the hell has this happened? Okay. So I'm going to throw this number out to you, which I just found out a couple years ago. And I threw it at my therapist here a month or so ago. I got a new therapist, you know, so I said, you know, you're giving me a homework assignment, right? I said, well, if you're giving me one, I'm going to give you one, you know, because I don't trust you, you know. And she goes, what's mine? I says, you got a week to check me out. And I gave her some stuff so it would make it easier for her. You know, I even gave her articles and stuff. And next week she walks in, she goes, oh, my God. Now, you know, the way I got called up was one thing, right? There was only 15 of us that happened to. 15.
Think about that. Yeah.
100,000 people over there, and there was only 15 of us.
And he was already out. He was completely out. And
four
so,
years out of
uniform. Right. And so, I mean, that's the craziest thing. But I want to thank everybody for listening. Mike, your story, I'm telling you, man, it just, when you talked to me the other day and you were telling me about only 15 of y'all, yeah, and y'all felt like y'all were drafted. I mean, I appreciate you coming on, man. I really do. I appreciate you coming on. Always, John, always appreciate you and you know, all of our listeners who are listening, all the vets who are, you know, supporting it and everything. I want to thank y'all. So y'all have a great night, and we're going to go into the after show and get some really deep conversation.
Thank you.
Good night, guys.